are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Friday, October 22nd, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and subscribe to the podcast so you get this bad boy once it goes live. We will talk to Ian McMillan from BetSided and the host of the Bacon Bets podcast. Ian is picking every single NFL game this season. He's calling it the Road to 272, and he's up 30 units already in the NFL. Learning how to bounce back from bad beats. We've certainly had a couple of those last couple nights in the NBA. And betting parlays only in Canada for years. Remember, they didn't have single game betting last year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years ago. If you wanted to bet in Canada, it was parlays only, minimum two legs. I would have loved to have been a bookie in Canada. Now, it's all government controlled, but they are finally getting into the 21st century and getting single game betting in Canada. But that wasn't the case for Ian when he was in college, heading up to the gas station, hungover, to get some drinks, get some food, and throw in a parlay. All that coming up later on in the show. Trifecta, one shot away last night from going 2-1. You know the deal. We rode this through the postseason last year. It's Trae Young, points over, threes over, top scorer. Numbers last night, 25.5 on the points, minus 120. Threes over 2.5, plus 120. Leading scorer, plus 165. Trae took a three with 4 minutes to go in a blowout. He had already made two. If he makes this three, it's the third one, and he's the leading scorer, and it's a wrap. Of course, he misses the three. So you go from 2-1 to 0-3. That's the way it's been. I don't play a lot of NBA early in the season, and hell, I'm jaded as shit after these. Talk about a nightmare start to the NBA this season. We're still up in the NBA, still up in basketball all around, but yuck. Opening night, took the Celtics +2. Tatum over 27.5 points. Celtics lose in double OT. Tatum goes 2 of 15 from 3. Finishes with 20. And last night, Trae misses one shot, wide open, 5 minutes to go, then gets pulled in a blowout. Needed three threes, he got two. Needed him to lead the game in scoring, finished with 19, Cam Reddish 20. Chicken picks in the middle of a 2-11 run. These are the runs where you find out what you're made of. I'm pissed, though. You know, you make five of those bets, you think, all right, I'm going to win at least two of them or three of them, given the final result. Given how many threes Jason Tatum took. Given how many open threes Trae Young missed. That's the way it goes sometimes. The only silver lining is that the bartender lost on Thursday Night Football. He's now 7-7 on the season. Got the text last night, a couple hours before the game. You never know when these texts are coming in. I think it was like 5:40, 6 o'clock East Coast. Broncos win tonight. I asked why. Baker Mayfield's not playing. That's that simple. Kelly in Vegas last night, it's like, wow, he's getting real predictable. Well, I don't know what to tell you. He liked the Broncos. He also has been on the Broncos now, I think, was it five times this year? He rode them the first 3 weeks, three straight covers, lost them in week four, then jumped out. Then he jumped back in last night. And hysterically enough, our guy started 4-1. Now he's 7-7. You do the math, because I'm sure he can't. A 3-6 run, and now he's going to start second-guessing himself. I promise I will not. I was more than happy with the process of our Tatum and Young bets. You're going to win a lot of those bets putting those in. Didn't get the result. Bartender, though, is now in a maze, and he's going to try his best to wiggle out of that on Sunday, and I would bet against him. That's for sure. We talked about three of these picks yesterday for football: Oregon +2, Wisconsin -3, Alabama -25. Don't really have to elaborate all that much more. I think it's pretty clear. I think Oregon is the right side here because of their running game and because their play caller and their quarterback's coach. Offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead is back in the saddle. He'll be at the game. He'll be able to call this game. Hasn't been the case last couple for Oregon. And I was talking to a couple bookmakers in Vegas, and they said that UCLA is slowly becoming the public side. Not just 55%, 60%. We're talking 70, 75% of the bets at multiple shops on UCLA as a very short home favorite. What could possibly go wrong? Wisconsin, seeing some movement there, up to 3.5 in the market. I laid 3. I was happy to lay 3 against Purdue. Boilermakers played extremely well against Iowa. I don't think they run it back in back-to-back weeks against very good defenses. You could argue Iowa and Wisconsin have great defenses by Big Ten standards. Purdue's okay. I went, oh, they're ranked now, the top 25. Whatever. Laid 3 with Wisconsin. And Alabama, I think the fire-breathing dragon is awake now. Nick Saban, his team, all of those great players, now they realize that they are not invincible. And that's a big deal for a talented team like that. I actually wrote about this on NessunBets.com, a story where I titled, Time to Bet Alabama to Win the National Title. And I'm not sure you know this, but I'll tell you, 4 times at Alabama under Nick Saban, the Tide lost a game in the regular season and went on to win the national championship. 2011, 2012, 2015, 2017. In all 4 of those seasons, the Tide got stronger after a loss. Remember when Tim Tebow in Florida lost and they said, you will never see another team play as hard or another player play as hard as I will? Some of these elite teams sometimes have to lose. I'm not making excuses for Alabama. We didn't bet Alabama against Texas A&M. We followed up, though, the following week against Mississippi State, and it wasn't even close. And here's the truth. I don't knock Alabama for losing at Texas A&M. That's a team that is loaded with blue-chip players, speed, skill, talent. It was a night game at Kyle Field. That's one of the toughest places in the country to play. And even in that game, even though the Tide started off slow, down 14 at half, down 14 in the third, they erased the deficit and actually took the lead in the fourth quarter. And yes, the Aggies won. You tipped your cap. But the Aggies were outgained 522 to 379. Alabama played the better game statistically. They didn't win on the scoreboard. Whatever. Say what you want about that. Did you see how they responded? 49-9, they go to Stark Vegas and just roll that team. Game wasn't even close. Alabama's offense is elite, people. And you have to imagine defense will tighten down the stretch. Saban has been a madman at practice in the film room. He's been studying hours on end. It's not like things with that roster aren't correctable. They still have the most talent in the country. I'm telling you, sometimes elite teams need to lose to know that it's possible. Correct these things. Get your focus in order. There's a lot of hype around Georgia. It's well-deserved. They're the consensus national title favorite. Dominant defense, skilled playmakers on offense, but do you really think they can beat Alabama? I mean, they can, but are you going to bet on Georgia to beat Alabama? SEC championship game, these two teams line up. Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, are you going to do it? Are you going to bet against Saban? I don't know. Either way, I think the Tide are a good bet, and if you shop around, you get the maximum value. If you're going to Vegas this weekend or know somebody in Vegas, hit them up on Venmo, send them some cash. Alabama to win the national title at the Westgate, 3-1, 100 wins 3. At books like FoxBet, Caesars, PointsBet, WinBet, 220, 225. You'll make an extra $75 or $80 by just getting the right price. And I would be very content going into the SEC championship game with Alabama and Georgia, having Bama plus 250 in my back pocket. That's the best American price. FanDuel, BetRivers, Sugar House, DraftKings 240. That's about the ceiling across the country. But in Vegas, you can get a better price at 3-1. So I am going in on Alabama to win the national title. No issue with that. added three to the Chicken Dinner card at Chicken X Dinner. Ole Miss sent out minus eight. A couple hours later, I saw it was nine. Got the screen up right now. Mississippi now nine at Circa, nine at South Point, 9.5 Westgate, 8.5 Caesars, 9.5 WinBet. Some 7.5s, FanDuel, DraftKings, Pinnacle, BetOnline. Anything under 10 should be fine. Mississippi could roll this team. LSU defense is a mess right now, and it has been a mess, and that's why Ed O's on his way out. I mean, there are other reasons, obviously, some off-the-field stuff as well, but the offense is not electric anymore. The defense can't stop anybody. Last two games, LSU has allowed 963 yards and 84 points. That's not LSU. That shouldn't be LSU. And good luck against the speed and tempo of Ole Miss. Matt Corral, run the football, play action, vertical threats down the field. Kiffin's going to spread the ball around, and he's going to test LSU laterally. They tried it against Alabama. The problem is Alabama's got dudes that can go sideline to sideline. They have amazing players. LSU, not so much. If the Rebels can start out the way I think they can, 10-0, 14-0, they will leave LSU in the dust. So I like Ole Miss put out minus eight. And in the NFL, I'm bullish on the Bengals here. Our guest today, Ian McMillan, is as well. I put this on Fox, I think, Monday. Took six. Now it's 6.5, 6, depending on where you shop. The Ravens are very fascinating because they're a very good football team, but they're also an erratic football team. We forget about them needing a last-second bomb and field goal to beat the Lions. We forget about them going down, 18, 19 points on Monday Night Football to Indianapolis. We forget about those things, and instead we remember what we've seen last. Well, Baltimore just rolled the L.A. Chargers, one of the hottest teams in the NFL. Ravens won 34-6. Wow. Now they only have to beat the Bengals by 7. Couple things to pay attention to here. Baltimore starting left tackle, Ronnie Stanley, off of the season. Good news for the Bengals defense. Cincinnati allowing only 18.5 points per game this year. They have a better defense than Baltimore does, which is very, very strange to say that out loud. And Burrow, with these receivers, with Chase, Higgins, and Boyd, they are threats down the field. And I think Joey Covers has enough to keep this game close. Defense plays well. 6.5 is a lot of points in an interdivisional game. These black and blue wars are always close, seemingly. Ravens play the Steelers so many years. Tight. 20-20, fourth quarter. 23-23, fourth quarter. I wouldn't be stunned if Cincinnati won the game outright. I don't think it's going to happen, but I like Bengals lose by 1, 3, 4, 6. I'm going to cover. So I like Cincinnati. And I don't love laying big numbers in the NFL. I'm not going to lay usually anything over 14. 13.5, 14 is probably my personal ceiling because so many things could go wrong. Laying 15, 17, teams down 3 touchdowns, they get that touchdown late in the game, starters are pulled. I mean, the backdoor is always possible with a double-digit spread, but I like my wiggle room on this one with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Chicago Bears. Tampa Bay laying 11.5 at the time that we tweeted it out. I just don't know how the Bears are going to move the football. Chicago very good on the ground this year. They can run the football, but guess what? That's what Tampa's the best at, stopping the run. If you can throw on Tampa, if you can stand in the pocket and connect down the field with good receivers, okay, you can hang around. You could cover 11.5, 12. I don't see it with Chicago. Bears won't be able to run, which will set up a lot of 3rd-and-6, 3rd-and-7 for young quarterback Justin Fields to try and make magic. And that's not a place you're going to make magic all that often. I think there are better spots to bet the Bears. They've looked okay last couple of weeks. But remember the game when the Bears went to Cleveland and would they get a yard of offense or something like that? I don't remember exactly, but it was bad. I think it was a yard of offense against Cleveland. I'm not going to say it's going to be that bad, but this is a spot where Tampa Bay, if they get to 27, 28 points, they're going to cover, I believe. 28-10, 28-13, 31-17, even that seems high for Chicago. I don't know how the Bears are going to score a lot. Turnovers possible, interceptions possible. Tampa Bay also lost to Chicago last year. Don't think they're going to look ahead of this Bears club. And the Bears have proven under Matt Nagy they can cover, they can compete against below average teams, Las Vegas Raiders this year. Bears go in there and win. What do they do against the great teams, though? They get smoked, usually, with Matt Nagy. So those are the three I added. Ole Miss minus 8, Bengals plus 6.5, Bucks minus 11.5. Speaking of picks, I don't understand how people sign up for contests, these contests in Vegas, Westgate, Circa, Golden Nugget, and don't put in your plays. You spend $500, $1,000, $1,500 on these contests and don't put your picks in? Last week alone, in the Circa Survivor, there were 10 people that didn't submit a play. Contest started with 4,000 entries, 4,080, 4,080. That's already been cut down to like 2,300. So half the pool is gone. This is also a contest with a $6 million jackpot. How do you not get your picks in if you're still around? That's $1,000 you just pissed away. Honestly, how does that happen? How do 10 people or 10 teams forget their survivor pick with $6 million on the line? What the fuck is wrong with you? That makes me so mad. Coming from somebody last year who entered the survivor and lost in the first week, I would love to be alive. You think I'd miss that pick? No. Would not happen. 10 people missed their picks last week. And you watch, more people are going to miss it this week. Incredible. I got a text last Thursday from Mike Helfgott, the coach. He's the guy who always makes us money in the drafts, NFL, NBA draft. And unfortunately, I got this text on Thursday, so I put the notes in my Friday sheet. We didn't have a show last Friday. I was on PTO. Guess what was on the sheet from last Friday? This won't make you happy, but I have to tell the truth here. Got a text from the coach who said Chris Duarte is in line for NBA Rookie of the Year. He's going to get serious minutes. There's a chance he plays 25 minutes a night. Look for him on your cash out books. Helfgott added, he's 50-1 at Bet Rivers, 50-1 at Sugar House, 33-1 at PointsBet, 30-1 at DraftKings. After one game, this market has completely turned over. One game. Duarte scored 27 points for the Pacers, 9 of 15 shooting, 6 of 9 from 3. I told you, he was 50-1, 33-1, 30-1. Duarte right now, the best price you can find in the world, DraftKings and PointsBet, 12-1. Caesars, 10-1. FanDuel, plus 850, 17-2. 8-1 at Bet Rivers and Sugar House. Holy cow. From 50-1 at Bet Rivers before game one to 8-1 after game one. It moved $42. Helfgott's got some 50 and some 33 and some 30. I am super salty. This shows you that if you have a feeling or a belief that somebody has a good number, you gotta bet it before it's too late. I pulled up the sheet this morning, and I'm like, oh, my God, Duarte 50-1. I forgot to talk about this. I forgot to text this. Forgot to tweet this. I pull up the apps. I'm like, oh, my God. He's 12-1 now. He was 50-1 8 days ago. 33-1 8 days ago. 30-1 8 days ago. Poof. Gone. Two more quick things before we get to Ian McMillan. $1 billion was bet in September at New Jersey Sportsbooks. $1 billion with a B. That, of course, per the Division of Gaming Enforcement. Holy shit. $1 billion in 1 month. $7 billion of handle in New Jersey this year already, with three more big months to report. October, November, December. They're going to get to $10 billion in 1 year. Handle, not hold, handle. Dollars wagered. Meanwhile, the Bruins, Celtics, Patriots, and Red Sox all play this weekend in Massachusetts, and we still can't bet here. I reached out to one of the senators that's leading the charge with sports betting. We're going to try and get him on Nesson and use some of that audio on Chicken Dinner in the coming weeks. But this bill was zipped through the House 158-3, and the Senate is still waiting. For what? There are some ideas. There are some guesses. But we're going to drill the senator, Eric Lesser. What does he know? What can he do? Because there seems to be a stalemate over a couple of things. The tax rate, the percentage that the state wants to take out, and college sports. Some people want it, some people don't. But this state is losing money by the day. And I don't want to compare, you know, $1 billion in New Jersey to nothing in Massachusetts, because that's not a fair fight. But every day they wait, that's less money that comes into your state and goes to other states. Now Connecticut's live. Mobile's up. New Hampshire to the north. Rhode Island to the south. Connecticut southwest. New York doesn't have mobile yet, but New York's got it. Like, Massachusetts is getting squeezed. And how about some of these games here? Red Sox and Yankees, wild card. Patriots, Buccaneers, Sunday night. Oh, what a cleaned up. Cleaned up. Last thing, Tree Bark Falafel, 5-1 in the NFL this year. 5-1. He's a maniac. He's on fire. Let's hear who he likes in week number 7.
We did it again. We're 5-1. Can you believe my record? 5 wins, 1 loss. That 1 loss, bullshit. Entire Giants team lost. I should be 6-0. But 5-1, still amazing record. This week, we'll take Chicago Bears plus 12.5. Against Tampa Bay Buccaneer. Tom Brady jumped on the I own you train and basically said that he also owns Chicago Bears like Aaron Rodgers. Even a team as awful as the Bears have some type of pride. They will not let the score get too out of hand. Take Chicago Bears plus 12.5 and enjoy that free money, bitches. Thank you.
That's my guy. I don't know how he computes these picks. Whatever he is doing is working, though. 5-1 in the NFL this year for Tree Bark Falafel, with a chance to make it 6 out of 7. Joining us on Chicken Dinner, he's the host of the Bacon Bets podcast. He works for BetSided, and this man is hot in the NFL right now. Ian McMillan. Go follow on Twitter at Ian MacBets, IAIN. What's up, man?
Not a whole lot, man. It's good to be on. Chicken and bacon coming together. Look at that.
Chicken Bacon Ranch is one of my favorite drunken pizza orders in college.
There you go. It was meant to be.
So you started this Road to 272. I'm going to guess it was something that you came up with or somebody at work came up with. Ian, if somebody told me at Nesson I had to bet every NFL game, I'd give them the middle finger. I think it's impossible to pick every game against the spread with success. You have proven that if you start hot, you can get hotter. 63-31, you are up 30 units right now. How did this idea come about where you're going to go out there in the open and bet on every single NFL game against the number?
Yeah, I think it just came out. I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to see what would happen if I were to actually do it. I started this actually last year. So last year was Road to 256, I think, because there was fewer games. So, of course, the NFL had to throw me an extra challenge this year by tossing in the extra week. But my goal last year, I mean, I'm not a professional gambler, first of all, not a professional sports bettor. I do it for entertainment. So last year when I did it, my goal was to just finish in the positive. If I could finish in the black, I thought it would be a successful season. I did last year. I finished up a little over 5 units. So I just thought that was a great success. As long as I didn't lose money betting on every single game, I was happy. And now I never would have expected I would have got off to this hot of a start this year. So I've given myself a little bit of a buffer. If I lose 30 units in the next 11 weeks, however long it is, then that'll be tough to swallow. I guess it's certainly possible, but I'm glad I've been able to give myself a little bit of a buffer here through the first 6 weeks.
Be honest, of the 63 wins, how many of those were up in the air in the fourth quarter?
Oh, a good number of them. Yeah, good. I mean, you know, everyone who bets on sports knows this. At the end of the day, it comes down to luck more than anything else. And I've had some decent fourth quarter luck for sure late in games.
two games in the last 2 weeks. I thought I capped them. Well, I had the Cleveland Browns plus 2.5 against the Chargers. They're up 14 in the fourth quarter, and they lose. And then the worst one of the season so far was the Patriots. Man, I took the 4 against the Cowboys. I was feeling great. It's 3rd and 24. McCarthy's going to blow this somehow. They had to kick a long field goal and then get the touchdown in overtime. Those are not easy losses for a lot of people to come back from. You know that.
I was with you on the Browns, so I lost that Browns game as well. And I lost on that Patriots-Cowboys game as well late, but I was actually on the under. Which probably wasn't as bad of a beat as the Patriots and the points, considering it went to overtime. You could have just got a Cowboys field goal and still won. But it was what, like 2.5 minutes left in the game. I think I had like 10 points to play with. So it was one of those games where I just chalked it up as a win. And then the Mac Jones pick six. And then right after that, the Patriots score on like the next play. So like 14 points in the span of like 30 seconds just to kill the under right in front of my face. So I was with you in both those games.
How do you shelf a bad beat? How do you move on?
You know, when you play sports, coaches always say after a bad loss, you give yourself like 12 hours, 24 hours to think about it and then move on. Similar thing for sports betting, except I give myself maybe like a half an hour. I mean, bad beats are going to happen. That's just the way sports betting goes. There's a saying that I always say, gambler giveth, gambler taketh away. You're going to have bad beats, but over the long run, they're going to be balanced out by some good beats. You got to remember those times that you got lucky at the end of the games as well. But yeah, it's those bad beats, they never really get too easy. They're always tough to swallow.
Well, I think you're being a little humble here, man. I think we both have friends that if they lose the Sunday afternoon game in a brutal fashion, all of a sudden they get the itch, they get a play. They're like, well, now I got to double down on Sunday night, which I would argue is the toughest line. You know, Sunday and Monday night football, those are the tightest lines, those standalone games. It's not easy for a lot of people to bounce back from bad losses. And a lot of times the strategy and the philosophy can always sort of sway off losses. And I think learning how to lose, I know you're doing 272. You're going to lose a lot. You know that. I know that. But for people betting 3-4 games a weekend, sometimes learning how to lose is the hardest part of this whole racket.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely is. I mean, that's kind of the benefit of me doing the road to 272 is all my picks are locked in on Wednesday night when I record my podcast. So those bets are locked in. I'm not going to place any more bets. So even if I get off to a bad start Sunday afternoon, I'm not going to chase and like double down on Sunday night. But I think that's just something kind of as a sports bettor. I think that kind of comes with your maturity as a sports bettor. You kind of learn to take those losses and kind of take them in stride and realize, I mean, the best sports bettors in the world are going to have bad weeks, are going to have bad months. I mean, I'm hot right now. January and February this year in college basketball, which I at least thought heading into the season was my strongest sport, I could not win a bet for like 2 months straight. It was unbelievably frustrating. So you just kind of realize that hot streaks happen, cold streaks happen, wins and losses happen. I think eventually when you're betting on sports, when you've been doing it for a number of years, you just kind of start to accept that fact a little bit.
I can't believe you left the motherland. You left Canada when they finally figured out sports betting. How did that happen?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how in-depth you know about the Canadian sports betting market, but it has always been legal. But the way that it was always legal was you had to bet on at least two games. I left and now they've approved single game sports betting. I think their thought behind it was that you can't fix games if you have to bet on at least two of them. But I mean, you know, Bob down the street's not rigging an NHL game. So I think that was kind of a stupid law to have in place. Also, it's just bad practice. Sports betting is legal, but you have to bet parlays. Like parlays are the only legal way to gamble on sports, which, is not good for the general. I remember when I started betting on sports in college, because you had to do parlays legally. Like I went like 40, I like 40 losing tickets in a row before I ever won a bet, because I was doing like these 4-game, 5-game parlays, because legally you had to bet on parlays. So not a good practice. I am glad they finally figured that out.
I would love to be a Canadian bookie for like the last 20 years. I would have already been retired. Joe Osborne, mutual friend of ours, good friend of yours, he told a story on the show last year about how he used to ride his bike to the gas station to get a Mountain Dew, a Kit Kat, and place a parlay. I'm like, that's the fucking life, man.
Yeah, yeah. You bought them at, you know, gas stations, convenience stores, just like where you buy like a lotto ticket. You wouldn't go, like, there's no actual sports book. It's all government ran. So like in college, that was our Sunday morning tradition. Myself and my roommates wake up just hungover, walk to the nearest convenience store. We'd all, you know, get like a bottle of pop or some kind of hungover food, fill out our pro lines. That's what the tickets are called. They're called pro lines. Fill them out. They'd all be like ridiculous, like 5-6 game parlays, and then walk back to our apartment and watch the NFL games on Sunday. So that's how I got into sports betting. That's what I did for the first like 3 years of it.
So they didn't have the sports books at all. See, I thought there was at least a sports book or two somewhere in Canada. You're saying no sports books.
Nope, no sports book. It's all government run, and it's all just like tickets, like little, you fill in, you know, those Scantron sheets, you fill in the bubbles at a gas station, and they print off like a big receipt, and each game has a number on it, just like sports books. And you fill in the bubble thing, they put it into a machine, it spits out your ticket, and you buy it that way. So there's no actual sports books. It's all just convenience stores and gas stations, or at least on the East Coast. But I'm not sure. I don't think there's any sports books in the big cities either.
All right, speaking of Scantrons and exams, let's do a little bit of homework here for the Week 7 exam that's coming up this weekend. A lot of big spreads, man. A lot of big numbers. Rams laying 15. Tampa's laying 12.5. Arizona's up to 18. How do you handle weeks like this where the books have just gotten drilled two weekends in a row, I guess? A team like Arizona, you know, you could make this line 15, 16, but they're going to jack it up. They're going to open it 17.5. It's going to get to 18. LA Rams, you could open it 13, but you're going to write it up to 14 anyway. So let's open it higher and move it to 15. How do you handle these big spreads when it comes to handicapping these games?
It's tough. I mean, my theme for this week is plug your nose, because I'm taking just a lot of ugly bets. And these kind of games are tough because I'm a big statistics guy. Like 90% of my handicapping is statistics. So if you look at the statistics between like the Lions and Rams game, you're not going to find any statistics that say to take the Lions. But at the same time, I can take double digit favorites if the matchup is right. But once it gets over 2 touchdowns, that just seems bananas to me. For an NFL team to win by like more than 2 touchdowns, just a lot of things need to go their way. They could be up 21, like in the Lions Rams game. Spry got that. I'm back in the Lions plus 15. The Rams could be up 21 points. The Lions score a late garbage time touchdown, and all of a sudden they're covering the spread. Like, this isn't college football. These guys are professional athletes. They're professional NFL players. I know the stats are completely skewed one way in kind of these big 2 touchdown spread games. I know the Rams beat up on the Giants last week, but you got to remember, I mean, these are professional athletes. This is, once you get up over 2 touchdowns, I don't know if there's a favorite I could back over 2 touchdowns.
And then the other side of that coin is, Ian, don't get cute. Don't take the Lions, because they could also lose 38-3. It's that mental challenge. And I will say this, I would love to bet the Lions a whole lot more as a big dog if they had Matthew Stafford. Who was better than Stafford when they're catching 8.5, they're down 13, 2 minutes to go, defense is in prevent, and Stafford's like, let's go. This is my time. Pad my stats, cover the back door. Those were great bets for years. The Lions as a big dog was Stafford. He was awesome late in games when it came to covering.
Him and Calvin Johnson, those two were the kings of the backdoor cover back in their day when they had that connection. I mean, I feel like a lot of, as good as Calvin Johnson is, I feel like so many of his stats come from garbage time. But they were the kings of the backdoor cover back then.
And the best part was that the defense just keep everything in front of you. They just, you'd get, you know, 15-yard play, 18-yard play, and then before you know it, there's 30 seconds on the clock, you need a touchdown, and it all comes down to Matthew Stafford, you're right, throwing up the jump ball to Calvin Johnson. And a lot of times they came through for the boys. I see you've got your Falcons hat on. Your boys are on the road in Miami this week. They open 1, and we're starting to see some 3s in the market now. 3 at Caesars, 3 at a couple offshore shops, a lot of 2.5. That's a weird game, a weird line. Atlanta minus 2.5, 47.5. How do you start this one?
Yeah, I am going to back my Falcons this week. So I always lock in my picks Wednesday night right before I record my podcast just for transparency reasons. So I got it at 2.5. I certainly liked it a lot better when it was at 1 when they opened up. I even saw a couple of books is at a pick 'em when it first opened up. Would have liked it a lot better there. But I think this Dolphins team might be the worst team in the NFL, to be completely honest. Their defense, which was supposed to be really good this year, ranks near the bottom of the league in almost every stat, lower than the Falcons defense in a lot of them, believe it or not. And this might be my Falcons bias, and I think it's because they had a bye week last week and then they beat the Jets the week before. But I'm actually starting to believe in this Falcons team a little bit, which is just means I'm just going to get my heart ripped out by them here this weekend probably. But a couple offensive stats that I think are kind of promising for the Falcons: 8th in red zone scoring offense and 5th in third down conversion percentage. And those are kind of two underlying stats that I do kind of value. I think they are kind of a good indication of just how effective an offense is. I mean, 5th and third down conversion percentage is pretty good. And also, by the way, Falcons have Dolphins, Panthers, Saints the next 3 weeks. So like, I've tricked myself into thinking they're going to be 5-3 here in a few weeks and like be in the hunt for a wild card spot. But once again, that's probably my Falcons bias coming through. But I do like the Falcons to cover 2.5 this week.
I saw this on your Twitter. Giants on the road in Daniel Jones's career, 12-5 ATS. Pretty good. Giants at home in Daniel Jones's career, 4-12 against the number. You got to bet one of these guys. You pick every game. You got to bet either Darnold is a road favorite or Jones is a short home dog. Good luck.
Yeah, this Giants-Panthers game, man, this is one of those games where I wish I wasn't betting. If I wasn't betting on every single NFL game, there's no way I'd be touching this one because both these teams just stink. I mean, they really do. I mean, everyone was high up on the Panthers, especially their defense. But the first three games were Jets, Texans, and Saints, which are like three of the worst offenses in the NFL right now. If you look at their stats over their last three games, which they lost, their defense is like near the bottom, 27th in opponent yards per play over the last three games. Giants aren't good offensively or defensively. You mentioned it. Sam Darnold sucks. Daniel Jones sucks at home. I mean, in this game, I honestly have no idea what to do in this game. So in these situations, I'll just take the home team getting the points, even though the Giants have been terrible. 8-21-1 against the spread, I believe, in their last 30 home games. So they're never good at home. And that goes back further than Daniel Jones as well. But I don't know what to do in this game. I don't like either team. So I'll take the home team getting points, I guess, and just hope for the best. But this is a necessary evil of betting on every single NFL game. There's a couple games every week that I just wish I didn't have to bet on, but I got to make a pick. So I'll take the Giants and the points.
Please tell me you've seen the movie Two for the Money with McConaughey and Pacino.
Yes.
So what you do with this game, you just go to the bathroom, lay on the ground and flip a coin. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I should have done that.
That's one of those games where you lock yourself in a room and you still don't come out after 24 hours. You don't know what to do. I think that might be a total game. Like, I might go under 43 in that one, but I also don't have to bet it. We've talked about the bad. We've talked about the ugly. I want to get you out of here on the good. What's your favorite bet for week number 7 in the NFL?
So my favorite bet, so I'm actually getting a – so. When I bet on every single game, I either do a spread bet, a total bet, but I also sprinkle in some underdog money line picks, and I've been very good with them so far this year. So I have a little bit of a heat check here as far as my underdog money line picks. I'm getting a little aggressive with it this week. I would probably recommend most people to take it on the spread, but like I said, I'm going to get aggressive, little heat check on my underdog money line picks. I like to love the Bengals against the Ravens.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on their money line. I got a +225 against the Ravens this week. That's kind of my upset pick. If you look at the stats, Cincinnati's actually had the better defense throughout the first 6 weeks, 2nd in opponent yards per play at 5.1, 7th in opponent yards per carry as well. So they've done a good job of stopping the run, and we all know that that's kind of a good recipe. If you're going to beat the Ravens, you have to be able to slow down the rush attack. And also the Ravens secondary hasn't been good this season, which has been kind of surprising. 21st in opponent yards per pass attempt. I think Joe Burrow is going to have a big game. And this is something I've kind of learned over the past couple of years when it comes to sports betting, especially the NFL, is that it's kind of like the stock market. You have to sell high on teams, buy low on other teams. This is a big sell high spot on the Ravens. They had that big comeback 2 weeks ago against the Colts. They beat up on a very good Chargers team this past week. Everyone loves the Ravens right now. But let's not forget, you know, let's not, you know, have too much recency bias here. This is a team that needed a 66-yard field goal to beat the Lions a few weeks ago. Yeah. And I think that's kind of a trap a lot of people fall into in the NFL, is recency bias more so than other sports, because you only see one game a week. So even though a game happened only 3 or 4 games ago, that's a month ago, and people have already forgot about that. But you got to look at the season as a whole. I think it's a big sell high spot on the Ravens. So I'm getting a little aggressive here. I would like, you know, if you don't want to get aggressive, Bengals +6 or +6.5, obviously a lot safer bet, but I'm taking a shot on their money line. I love the Bengals this week. Definitely my best bet of the week.
I think this is the first time ever I've asked a guest to give me their favorite bet, and they've given me a 6-point, 6.5-point dog on the money line. I love the balls on Ian McMillan.
It's a heat check.
At Ian Mac Betts, IAINMAC Betts. He's at BetSided and the host of the Bacon Betts podcast. You brought the heat, man. I appreciate you, and I will think about you as I make my next parlay. I'll think about being hungover or riding my bike to the gas station. That's an amazing, amazing story.
I love it, man. Thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Ian McMillan for hopping on the show. Record check, well, after an 0-5 slide and a 2-11 slide, 178, 174, and 7, we're down 4.8 units, but that won't stop the bets for football: Oregon +2, Wisconsin -3, Ole Miss -8, Alabama -25, the Bengals +6 in the hook, Bucks -11.5. And remember this, Braves futures, do it for Pauly, hashtag do it for Pauly. We've got 14 units hanging in the air. I need Atlanta to win game 6 or game 7. I refuse to hedge in this round. Ain't happening. I'm pissed off. Jason Tatum, Trae Young have pissed me off. I want the Braves in the World Series. Then we can decide from there. Because in that World Series, they'd be +150. Maybe. So you could get creative there with the other side, depending on who it is, Houston or Boston. But no hedge yet. Let's get into that World Series. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next week right here at Chicken Dinner.